GovBlockCon began 4 years ago at Biola University, and the Torrey Honors Institute got together and started the conference in order to bring the Christian community that was on the digital end of things together for real-life embodied interaction. One of the outputs of this interaction, a series of conversations, led to the idea of, hey, we should write a book. Now, one of the things that can happen at these conferences is that everyone gets this really good idea, right? There's a lot of opportunities. I have a thing. You have a thing. That guy over there has a thing. We should all do a thing. And then nothing happens, right? So it's like, woo, bang. Like 2 days later, everything dies, and everyone's doing their own, like, you know, and then we get back together, and we get each other stoked about doing another thing, and this perpetuates ad infinitum. Except with Roger Overton, who's our next speaker, going to talk about an exciting and a very good book that has been released by our friends at Crossway called The New Media Frontier. Roger said, hey, look, guys, you want to do a thing? Let's do a thing. And then he just beat people over the head for 2 years until genius spilled forth on a page, and now we have an exciting book for all of you today. Just as a reminder, we're going to have a book signing by the famous Roger Overton and Scott Ott, who you just had the pleasure of hearing, as well as John Mark Reynolds, right after this. It's going to be in the VIP area, so if you want to pick up a copy of the book, you can do so right out here at the VIP area right after the session's done. It's only $10. It's a very good deal. If you can't find one here, because I'm sure we're going to sell out quickly, the Barnes & Noble bookstore will also have a few. So without further ado, Roger Overton, the editor of the New Media Frontier.
Okay. There is genius in the pages, and that's because there's other people who contributed to it. There's about 15 people who contributed to the book. Most of them have been a part of this conference over the years, and so it's been a great joy to bring that all together, work with all these people. One of the people, the first organizers of the GodBlockCon was Matt Anderson. Unfortunately, he's not here this year, but some of you know him. And he's a part of the project, and he really helped also get this off the ground and helped along the way. Dustin Stevie, who you just saw, has been organizing it the past few years, and he's helped out a lot as well, so I want to recognize them. Scott Ott is here today. He's part of the book. Rhett Smith was also here. He had to fly home early. Some of these people are still involved in what we're doing here, and we're excited to see how we can work together, as well as helping them out and what they're doing apart from this. When I began working on this project with John Mark, there was one verse that almost haunted me in a way, but kept coming to mind, and it kind of became the theme of the book in a sense. And that's Ecclesiastes 1:9, "What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun." And this may seem like an odd verse to think about when we're reflecting on so-called new media. Certainly, I could have chosen something more inspiring like the Great Commission or how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. While we do hope to inspire, we hope to inspire in the right way. And to do so, we must start with the understanding that new media isn't really that new. New media is nothing more than communication, which is something that we've done throughout human history. All that is new is the form and availability of communication. Instead of writing to a local paper hoping to get an opinion published, many people post things on their blogs or on their Facebook. Internet technology has enhanced textual communication by allowing anyone to publish their opinions. And likewise, YouTube is an online television, podcasting is online radio, Facebook and MySpace are online networks of mailing lists, in a sense. But they're all democratized. With the click of a few buttons, anyone can add their voice to this media. In the world of the internet, anyone with access can produce and publish information that is viewable by millions of people around the world. Today, we have direct access to eyewitness news worldwide, the speculations of scholars, and daily mood updates from old friends from high school on Facebook. Usually, we hope that's where we know them from. Sometimes we don't know who they are. But not only do we have access to such things, we can add our voice by responding to them and repackaging it in our distinct ways. And certainly this democratized technology has its benefits. Most obviously, we can note that anyone in the world can hear the gospel via the new media. We can more easily stay in touch with relatives and people within our own church communities. We can receive updates regularly from missionaries around the world. The opportunities to use new media to advance and demonstrate the kingdom of God are significant, and we discuss many of them in this book. However, if we were to leave it at just the benefits, we would be uncritical stewards of this new technology. It's far too easy to embrace the intended benefits of new technology without noticing the unintended consequences. One such consequence is that frequent readers of blogs become accustomed to brief, cursory thoughts and lose their appetite for longer, deeper commentaries. We might expect then that in the long run, people will generally have a lower tolerance for complex lines of argument and will only give their ear to pithy sound bites, which is pretty much already happening. Through social networks like Facebook and MySpace, we can easily keep in touch with hundreds of friends and family members, but such platforms make it easy to neglect spending time together face-to-face. We are exchanging live human interaction for artificial internet relationships. While new media is merely a new way of doing something we've done before, it establishes both new opportunities and new consequences. And this is where the concept of the frontier comes in. Many of us Americans, when we think of the frontier, we think of the Old West and kind of, the gallantry of it, riding on the horse and exploring things. But there's also danger involved. Some people like John Mark would think of space being the final frontier because of Star Trek. And it's the same sense. There's new and exciting things, but there's also danger, the Borg lurk out there. So what are Christians to make of these changes in media? Should we dive in immediately and use all of it that we can? Or should we maybe stand back a little and think through it? Since what we call new is inherently tied to the past, it will be helpful for us to reflect on a similar situation in church history and helping formulate answers today. As most of you well know, the most notable advances in textual communication were those by Johannes Gutenberg of the mid-1400s, or Johannes. When the name Gutenberg comes up, we immediately think of the printing press, which was a device that enabled pressmen to print up to 250 pages an hour. Using his skills as a goldsmith, Gutenberg also developed the first hand molds used for creating movable type needed in large quantities for the printing press. Additionally, he has been attributed with producing an oil-based ink that's more suitable for the press. The most obvious benefits from the Christian perspective of the printing press were getting the Bible out. The Roman Catholic monk, Martin Luther, nailed an academic complaint to the church door in 1517. Wow. Since his article was written in Latin, only a few people could read it, and they were scholars. But a new era of textual communication had taken place, and due to the work of an unknown translator in a printing press, copies of Luther's 95 theses could be found throughout Europe within a month. Sorry about that. Thanks, Scott. Textual information had only been the domain of scholars prior to that, and was timely and costly to produce. However, the advent of the printing press meant that the same information was now available to anyone who could read, a demographic that was drastically growing. Once Luther translated the Bible into German, common people could judge for themselves whether Luther's criticisms of the church were accurate. A longer list of benefits provided by Gutenberg's printing press could be provided, but it's important to also reflect on some of the unintended consequences. Some of them were beneficial. Features such as page numbers and indexes could be added to books as they were being standardized. Gutenberg's movable type led to the creation of various fonts, and when thinner fonts were produced, it meant that books could be printed on fewer pages, and therefore they were cheaper again to produce. However, the ability to widely distribute ideas meant that harmful ideas could spread just as quickly as the good ones. We rightly credit Martin Luther with many great writings that challenged the Roman Catholic Church. But not all of his contributions were praiseworthy. One of his books was On the Jews and Their Lies, a book that encouraged hatred and violence against Jewish people. Just as the printing press helped spread knowledge of the Bible to popular society, so too did it help spread anti-Semitism across Germany. These are just a few of the unintended consequences brought forth by the use of the printing press. As it was during the time of the Reformation, the democratization of information through technology will bring forth both good and harm. Such lessons from the past are available for our instruction, and we would be unwise to ignore them, as they can help guide us today. Hugh Hewitt put it well. What is really going on is an information reformation, similar in consequence to the reformation that split Christianity in the 16th century. The key to that reformation was the wide dissemination of Scripture among an increasingly literate laity. Today we do not have a canon, but we do have an appetite for information. The arrival of a new technology of distribution and a million willing content providers. If we are going to seek God's glory in this new media, we cannot use it uncritically. God's people must be astute observers, seeking to keep in mind not only the benefits of our new abilities to communicate, but also what consequences we might not intend to bring about by our use. Yet in our critical stance, we cannot stand aside and wait and see what happens. If Christians are not on the forefront of this new technology to advance God's kingdom, then some other kingdom will be advanced through it. We must go forward thoughtfully, seeking to use whatever new technology is developed for God's glory. Our goal with the new media frontier is to help you toward this end, to aid you in thinking through the whys and hows of engaging the new media, to inspire you to act through media for the cause of Christ. Historically, the Christians who made the most difference in the world are those who did not seclude themselves from everything that was called new. Most, if not all of us, are already involved in some way and have likely experienced some fruit of our labor. But we must also make the case to our like-minded brothers and sisters who are not here, who do not think that new media is worth getting involved with. I think the most compelling reason Christians should care about new media is because those around us do. In his chapter in the New Media Frontier, college pastor Rhett Smith recounts his realization that his refusal to enter social networking was an obstacle to relating to his students. His students were engaging in activities online he knew nothing about, but once he logged into their world, he saw an abundance of opportunities to minister in their lives. Face-to-face relationships will always be the best way to minister to those in our churches and surrounding communities, but no one has the time to keep up with everyone in their life on a regular basis. Rhett found that by taking advantage of new media, he was able to multiply his ministry efforts and be a more effective voice in the lives of his students. Simply being visible in their social networks made him appear available, and many of his students sought him out because of it, often leading to more face-to-face ministry. The bottom line is that we should care about new media because a growing number of people invest part of their lives there, and we would be missing out on opportunities if we did not meet them there. The fact that a growing number of people are spending significant time on the internet engaged in new media is not remarkable. Anyone who is paying attention sees this, including the enemy. Just a few months ago, the number one audiobook on iTunes was A New Earth, Awakening Your Life's Purpose by New Age guru Eckhart Tolle. At the same time, the most popular podcast on iTunes was Oprah Winfrey's 10-class series on the book. While it's important to respond to false teachings outside of new media, we will have a greater impact if new media is part of our approach. How do I know? Because new media is working quite well for false teachers. But iTunes, YouTube, and every blogging platform that is out there is just as open to Christians as it is to the enemy. Some ministries are already knee-deep in using new media to advance the truth. One such ministry is Stand to Reason, which has been using iTunes and YouTube to expand the audience of their weekly radio broadcasts. Another is the Mormonism Research Ministry, which has been utilizing YouTube to promote videos exposing the lies of Mormonism. In my chapter on evangelism and apologetics, I look at these ministries as well as others who are doing new media. These ministries are examples of how Christians can be effective in new media, either by doing something new or by multiplying what they're already doing. Though the enemy has been using new media to advance his cause, so too have Christians. And there is ample room for more to join their brothers and sisters on the front lines. Especially in new media, we act before a watching world. They take note of our triumphs and failures, and whether we wish them to or not, they associate our actions with Jesus Christ. Every time we react, we run the risk of misunderstanding, humiliating, or otherwise offending who or what we are reacting to. every time we communicate. We run the risk of distorting, simplifying, or perverting our message. This is true of the gospel and especially true when we attempt to use new media to communicate it. Along with new opportunities we have been given with which to spread the good news, there are new opportunities for mistakes as well. And this isn't a sermon, but I've got 3 points to kind of help us filter our actions through new media. The first is that we must be faithful to the message of Christ. Jude 1:3 says that we are to contend for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. Regardless of our time, culture, language, location, or philosophical persuasions, the central message we must preach as Christians is the same one that was passed down from the early church. How we communicate it may change, but what we communicate is not good news if it is not the simple gospel found in the pages of the Bible. For all that we might do in attempting to share the gospel, salvation ultimately comes down to what God does. As Paul said in Romans 1:16, the gospel is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. Being faithful to the message requires that we have some knowledge of it. And when it comes to the theology of the gospel and apologetics, there's a lot of knowledge to be had. Most of us have not had time to learn everything there is to learn out there. However, one of the benefits of conversing in new media is that the internet is at our fingertips. It's like having lunch with a friend with a library in our backpacks. Instead of just mentioning a book or trying to quote an argument from an article from memory, we can link directly to the material, quote it accurately, and engage it bit by bit. In live conversation, it is easy to unintentionally misremember something or misrepresent a position. In the new media, we have fewer excuses. With such a wealth of resources available for us for research through the internet, it is our responsibility to take the time to make sure we get things right. This means we must find reputable resources to link to for our information and our claims. Too many people have fallen for the idea that if it's on the internet, it must be true. We must evaluate each resource in light of what God's revealed, as well as general truth and rationality. There are a few websites that I found to be reliable and helpful. One is thegospelcoalition.org. The Gospel Coalition exists to serve the church by drawing Christians together in renewed passion for the gospel of Christ and teach them to clearly communicate the gospel through speech and lifestyles that are submitted to the lordship of Christ over all things. The ministry website provides valuable videos, lectures, articles, and other aids towards this cause. Another website is str.org, and that's the website of Stand to Reason. Stand to Reason is an organization dedicated to training Christians to make a thoughtful defense of traditional Christianity in the public square. On their website, readers will find information that helps to clarify the teachings of Christianity and Christian living, as well as discern issues in contemporary culture, most of which are written by Greg Kokel. Their material serves not only as a great starting point for conversations and blogs, but also is helpful for Christians to further cultivate knowledge, character, and especially wisdom. Stand to Reason also utilizes new media through their popular and insightful blogs and radio podcasts. Another website is CARM.org. It's C-A-R-M. That's the Christian Apologetics and Research Ministry. Ran by founder Matthew Slick, and is an informative site dealing with topics from the defense of mere Christianity to exposing the problems of cults and other religions. We go to the CARM site for straight facts such as a list of prophecies Jesus fulfilled or archived incriminating statements by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Mormons or the Watchtower, the Jehovah's Witnesses. So that's being faithful to the message of Christ, and those are some resources to help us out with that. The second point is to be faithful to the virtues of Christ. In 1 Peter 3, we are told that in your hearts regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense for anyone who asks you for the hope that is in you, yet do so with gentleness and respect. In other words, the words that we say in defense of the gospel must be matched by how we act. Josh McDowell, is a popular author in evidential apologetics, notes that our motivation in using apologetics is to glorify and magnify Jesus Christ, not to win an argument. One should have a gentle and reverent spirit when using apologetics or evidences. The overarching virtue upon which all the other virtues depend is that of love. Zal Muller said, we must be able to say to non-Christians, I'm going to love you more than you love your sin, because in the same way I was loved until I came to know the Lord Jesus Christ. Even more important than our love for non-Christians is our love for fellow Christians. Francis Schaeffer said that after we have done our best to communicate to a lost world, still we must never forget that the final apologetic which Jesus gives is the observable love of true Christians to true Christians. If we lack love for our fellow Christians, we would do better to shut our mouths and silence our keyboards than profane the name of Christ who we claim to follow. In our lives, we must seek opportunities to live out this love in a manner apparent to the world around us. Very rarely will our lifestyles be explicitly visible in the new media. However, individual choices we make on a day-to-day basis will impact our character, and is with our character with which we write. One of the most important virtues for us to cultivate is the ability to be charitable. Charitability can be impacted in a number of different ways. Unless we have a good reason to believe otherwise, we ought to assume that people are being honest about what they believe. Accusing someone of believing something other than what they have said can be a quick way to end a conversation. We also ought to assume that people have the best of intentions. This means that if a comment could be taken either positively or negatively, we should take it positively. To put it simply, we must be charitable by giving people the benefit of the doubt by assuming that those we converse with are acting as good, honest individuals. They might not be, but conversations and relationships usually aren't built on distrust right at the beginning. Part of the Christian apologetic enterprise is to criticize contrary beliefs. A serious danger comes when we fail to draw a line between the beliefs and the people who hold them. We are to disrespect ideas foreign to Christianity, but we are to respect the people who hold those ideas, because they are creatures made in the image of God. Especially when conversations get heated, we should make it a point to point out our reverence for our challengers. Remember that our message is necessarily offensive. We're telling people that they're sinners and they need a Savior. So our character should not make that message any more offensive. We are not blogging to win arguments, but to win people. Our concern must be more for the people than their ideas, even though we express our concern through addressing their ideas. While we ought to be careful when attacking beliefs to affirm... We ought to be careful when attacking people's beliefs to affirm that we respect the people who hold them. And we should be prepared for those who also don't pay us the same courtesy. We will be insulted and ridiculed, but that is never an excuse for responding in like manner. It will be helpful if we refrain from taking attacks personally and overreacting, but ultimately we must remember that it's not really about us anyway. Our proper reaction to offense is to encourage better dialogue. The third point is to be faithful to the wisdom of Christ. Christians are regarded as sheep among wolves, so we must be wise as serpent and innocent as doves. In extreme cases, being wise means to not give dogs what is holy and to not throw our pearls before pigs, as Jesus said. We must be aware of whether what we are doing is even worthy of our time, whether it is worthwhile to pursue a relationship or simply give someone something to think about. Wisdom involves making the right choices in complex situations and knowing how and when to say the right word in challenging conversations. How can we be wise with our words and time when we're blogging? First, we must be selective about what topics we post about and how we approach those topics. To do this, it is a good idea to know something about your audience and what they respond to. The best way to find out what interests your readers is to try out a number of different things. We've talked about Mormon theology, the emerging church a lot on the A-Team blog. And these are usually good conversation starters. People get interested in those because there's something that's personal to them. In order for this to work, our readers must have the ability to comment on our blogs. When readers and viewers have a voice, they are more likely to return, and they're more likely to engage the content even if they don't leave a comment. Conversations are the first step towards relationships, and relationships are the cornerstone of effective evangelism. Being wise in the new media often requires the use of tactics. Tactics involves the ability to listen and discern when to speak and when to ask probing questions. Greg Kokel has explained the importance of questions. He says that asking simple, leading questions is an almost effortless way to accomplish balance. You can advance the dialogue and make capital of the conversation for spiritual ends without seeming abrupt, rude, or pushy. In a chapter entitled Ask at Least a Half Dozen Questions, Hugh Hewitt says that when you ask a question, you're displaying interest in the person asked. And in most settings, this is a great boon of pride and self-worth to the person being asked. There are different types of questions, and the ones most useful for evangelism and apologetics are clarifying and exposing questions. Clarifying questions are those used to gain information, such as, why do you believe that? Or, can you further clarify your beliefs about such and such? The second useful type is the exposing questions. These are questions used to expose a problem or weakness in someone's position or reasoning. For example, if someone were to claim there are no true propositions, an exposing question would be, is that proposition true? It is not a rare occurrence for someone to leave a good question or two and then never return to the conversation. If we're going to make effective use of our time, such flyby comments and questions are often not going to cut it. We need to stick around and engage people's ideas. Real conversations that lead to relationships require attentive interaction from both sides, and flyby comments tend to detract from conversations rather than help move them forward. So in seeking to glorify God through new media, I believe we must pay careful attention to Christ's message, Christ's virtue, and Christ's wisdom. We will find both friend and foe on the new media frontier, some even as critical as those who attempted to challenge Jesus in his day. Whether we blog, podcast, or post videos on YouTube, our example for conduct must always be Jesus Christ. And this has been our goal in preparing the new media frontier. As with any new frontier, we'll find success and failure as we progress. And as much as I'd like to tell you that there's a whole bunch of new money in the new media out there for you, or that it'll launch you into a steady career, or that it'll make all your wildest dreams come true in some other way, we must recognize that it is all worthless unless it is about glorifying God. We hope that we have commended this through the words that are now in print, that in these pages you will find inspiration to speak the truth and to do so with gentleness and clarity. That's it. How are we doing on time? Anybody? Time? Okay. I guess there's time for a couple questions before the book signing. So if there's any general questions about the book or anything like that. Or we could just do the book sign. Amy? Contributors? Hugh Hewitt wrote the foreword. You might have heard of him. He's got a small radio show. John Mark Reynolds wrote the first two chapters of the book, basically laying the ground for what is new media and what is the future of new media. Matthew Anderson wrote the chapter on the dangers of new media, how it affects our soul. Joe Carter wrote a chapter on how to blog. That's very helpful. There's also another how-to chapter on podcasting and doing video podcasts. That's by Matthew Epinetti and Terrence Armentano. Pastor David Wayne wrote a chapter on theology blogging. Pastor Todd Bolsinger wrote Blog as Microwave Community. It's basically talking about community in the blogosphere and how that ties into real life. Pastor Mark D. Roberts wrote a chapter on pastors and new media. Rhett Smith wrote a chapter on youth ministry. I highly recommend that one. I wrote the chapter on evangelism and apologetics. Fred Sanders wrote a great chapter on new media in academics. This is a chapter that I think academics should read, and you might find it insightful as well. If you know academics, definitely hand this off to them. I think they'll find it interesting. Jason Baker wrote a chapter on e-learning, basically online education, and how new media is shaping online education. Scott Ott wrote the chapter on politics and journalism. There's a chapter on bioethics in blogging by Joe Carter and Matthew Eppinetti. And the final chapter is by Stephen Childs on social justice and social relief. Stephen Childs was involved in a project called Katrina Grace. And in the aftermath of Katrina, he used new media to help get resources to those who were affected by the hurricane. So that's kind of the content of the book. Yes, Scott. I think, yeah, definitely, if you know pastors or youth workers, anyone involved in ministry, I think they're going to find a lot of resources in this book that are going to help them out. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move over and start the book signing. Thanks.